right, we're back. Let's give a nice Farm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Agriculture Secretary, Chuck Ross. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
And you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We're going to talk a little bit of agriculture issues. We're going to talk about this bill that came out of a House committee on Friday dealing with pollution of Lake Champlain. Let's actually start with that, Secretary. This was a bill that came out of the House Fish and Wildlife and Water Resources Committee, calls for stronger actions to be taken to prevent pollution by farms, among a bunch of other people, too. Let's talk about the farming community, though. How is this law going to change the amount of pollution going into Lake Champlain from farms?
It's going to change it in a couple ways. We are in this administration proposing through this bill and through our negotiations around a total maximum daily load proposal with the EPA, an assembling of resources measured in over $60 million to be expended over the next 4.5 years on farms to help those farmers implement conservation practices that we know reduce phosphorus non-point source pollution. And so what this bill is all about is helping the farming community take more aggressive steps in terms of how they manage and steward their land so they can mitigate the impact they have on the waters of the state through largely phosphorus, but there's some nitrogen issues in other parts of the state, but Lake Champlain is phosphorus constrained. And we do that in three ways, essentially, Mark. One is an enhancement of stewardship resources that will be made available to farmers largely through the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, that is a federal agency that has been providing these kinds of services for years. And the revenue, or the resources rather, that have been accumulated, the $60 million I referred to, will largely go through their hands, but in partnership with the Agency of Agriculture, who is out in the field inspecting farms, helping farmers understand what's expected of them, helping them with technical assistance, helping them figure out how to do compliance with the water qualities of the state, and directing them to those resources. The other way we're going to do this, the two other ways, Mark, is partnership. It's stewardship, second major variable is partnership. We're going to be working with many other organizations in the state of Vermont to get onto the farms, get the message clear to the farming community that there are resources available, there are expectations around enhanced stewardship where it's necessary, that we want the many, many organizations that are involved in working with farmers and working on water quality will work together to get that message. The most important single thing in my mind to improving the situation with respect to waters of the state is developing a culture where everyone believes they are a steward individually and collectively for the waters of the state, and that we communicate that, educate people as to what their options are. Clearly, that's the case in farming, in the farm community, but it's statewide. You know, and at the end of the day, the farming community, and I'm proud of them, that they recognize they have made a contribution to the problem, and they want to make a contribution to the solution, and they need to do their work all in partnership with the many other sectors of the state of Vermont, the development community, the transportation community, and so on, that also make contributions to the phosphorus load. That partnership, collectively, that culture that we need to establish is going to be critical. And that goes to the third point, and that's accountability. When you have the right kind of culture, we all hold ourselves accountable to doing things right. We understand we have a role and responsibility as members of our community to do things the right way and in an improved way, especially when we're confronted with the kinds of problems we have seen with a lake, and which you've heard me say before. I was on Missisquoi Bay this summer when it was in full bloom. It was a tragic sight, to be candid. So we need to establish that culture of stewardship and partnership and accountability where we all hold ourselves accountable. there's another element of accountability that is important, and that is we are seeing through this bill enhanced enforcement capabilities on the part of the Agency of Agriculture to make sure that people understand that when they are in violation, the violations are taken seriously, and we are going to be able to act more quickly and efficiently to bring those violations to end and bring people into compliance, and make it not just a cost of doing business, but something that they understand they need to get done and can't ignore.
Is that something you've been reluctant to do in the past?
Not reluctant. We have not necessarily had the resources we wanted to have and have needed to have to do it. One of the challenges that I found, Mark, in the 4 years I've been in this position, was the first challenge was the first year we had record snows, record lake flooding, and then Irene. And quite candidly, it took us about 2 years into the Shumlin administration to get to a place where we could start doing what we needed to do. With respect to many other issues, What I discovered on day one when I walked in the door, I already knew we had a water quality problem. David Mears and I actually had conversations before either one of us were sworn in that this was an issue that we needed to deal with. And I had learned that we had four people in the Agency of Agriculture that were charged with monitoring, inspecting, enforcing, helping out on education, outreach, and compliance. There are only four individuals charged with that duty in the agency, and we had, according to the USDA, if you use their numbers, 7,000 farms that are existence in the state of Vermont, and we only had four people to do that work. And their job was largely focused on what we call medium farm operations, the 200 cow and up, or large farm operations, 700 cows and up, and they're there are other medium farm operations that are cow equivalents, if you will, if you were in chickens or hogs or something. But we typically talk in the cow units. And those people spend most of their time doing and bringing people into the permits and into compliance on those operations. And the rest of the farms, of which there are only 100, there are 154 MFOs and LFOs, the rest of the farms that we dealt with basically on a complaint-driven basis, because that's the only way we could do it given the resources we had. What's important part of this bill is that...
What happened when you got complaints?
We would try to turn it around in 24 hours and have somebody out in the field to inspect the complaint that we got. You know, sometimes you can deal with them over the phone because they may not be happening that very moment. But when we had something that was ongoing, we tried to get people out within 24 hours. And, you know, for example, there was one complaint that was made in one small body of water in Lake Carmine, to be exact, and that there was a problem on a farm. We got out there in less than 24 hours and found out in that particular instance the farm wasn't the issue. So we try to do that, and most of the time we succeed. But what we weren't doing is we weren't getting out to the small farm operations on a regular basis as we were with the MFOs and the LFOs, because we just didn't have the staff people to do it. And that's and as a consequence, when what we've learned, and the legislature gave us another person a year ago, and we've assigned that person to work in the Franklin County, Missisquoi River Basin area, we've assigned that person to go out there and work with all the small farms. We have staff to do the MFOs and the LFOs. And what we've discovered is that many of the farmers either aren't familiar with the AAPs, the base regulatory standards for the water quality in the state of Vermont.
Accepted agricultural practices,
Sorry. Either they weren't familiar with them or didn't know of them at all.
All right, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, all these new efforts that are in this law, building, you know, buffer zones and all this kind of thing, did farmers not know about this stuff? They didn't care about this stuff, or they didn't have the money to do it, anything about it?
You know, probably to some degree, you know, you'd have to look at the landscape and say all three, but I think we found very few that don't care. And we found most people do care that they how they manage their farms. There have been a surprising number that were not aware of the accepted agriculture practices regulatory floor, that they all people engaged in any farming practice in the state of Vermont are supposed to comply with the AAPs. And when we have over, you know, according to the USDA definition, $1,000 of sales or more, 7,000, over 7,000 of those farms, we just weren't getting to them and they weren't aware of it. Because when what I learned is when the AAPs were first implemented, passed by rule, the agency had no staff and has never been given specific staff to go out and do that education outreach piece that you need to do to get as diverse a community of small farm operators informed as to what the AAPs are and that they need to comply with them. And so we're playing a little catch-up here. And, you know, the state has been well-intended with respect to the goals and promises around water quality, but we frankly have not resourced the effort at the state level as well as we could have. And that's one of the things this administration and the proposals we're putting forward in the TMDL and the work we're engaged in on this bill are trying to rectify.
Why not? There's another level of practices called best management practices, which my understanding is are stronger than accepted agricultural practices. Why not mandate this higher level of
the whole alphabet soup of AAPs and BMPs and so on gets a little confusing. But
I just oversimplified it. Why not put in the stricter standards?
And actually, one of the things we're proposing and is being considered in this bill is that we reopen the AAPs, the Accepted Agricultural Practices Rule, and propose practices that are called BMPs. Now,
Well, then don't get into that. Why not do that, what you just talked about, something stronger?
We are looking at implementing amending the AAPs to include those stronger practices. Now, the way it has worked in the past is you're supposed to comply with the AAPs. If you cannot comply with the AAPs, then the agency would ask you to implement a BMP so you don't have a non-point problem. So if you don't have a non-point source pollution problem, the way you're managing your farm, then you're in compliance with the AAPs, and you don't need to do a BMP just to do it. Because you're already not creating a problem. So the idea was that the AAPs were the regulatory floor. And quite frankly, you know, one of our challenges has been that we have discovering there's a lot of people that are in conducting farming practices that are not familiar what the regulatory floor is. And so just getting them to do that will be an improvement. And then where we have people that are having challenges, even as they try to comply, we're going to insist they do BMPs. That's what we're doing now. And that we're going to try to look at those practices like cover cropping that might be included in the AAPs amended to improve everyone's base level of performance. And that's a public rulemaking process. We've already started the gears turning in the agency with the limited staff we have to start that, figuring out what that might look like. The rulemaking process, I think, is really important for folks to understand, is a public process. We would put a proposal on table and we'd seek people's input and take their input and make adjustments and then propose a final rule that ultimately is approved, as you know, by a committee called the a committee in the legislature, the part of the LCAR process, another acronym, but is you can't have a rule approved and become the equivalent of law without a committee composed of legislators to sign off on that rule.
Okay, you're done. You can use EPA. That's the only other an acronym. You're done. You're out of acronyms for this session.
Okay. Fair enough.
We're talking with Chuck Russ. He's the Agriculture Secretary. You've mentioned before, and others have mentioned, that this whole idea that it's not just the agriculture community, it's development community, it's all of us putting fertilizer on our lawn, all this kind of stuff. And the new buzz, the new mantra seems to be this, David Dean mentioned it on Friday, I've heard you mention it, Dave Mears has mentioned it, all in seems to be the phrase that somebody must have cooked up in a back room. I feel a little bit like we're being subjected to a marketing campaign as much as a cleanup plan.
Well, that's unfortunate, because I think what we're trying to say, and I've frankly, I don't know if it originated with me or David or somebody else, but I've been using All In for quite some time. And what I'm really trying to say is that we can't expect somebody else to do all the work. We, as a community of Vermonters, need to address this issue that is, frankly, a community-wide problem, and it's in terms of water quality being negatively affected by our practices, both past and present. And you know, it's creating that culture, Mark, is, I think, frankly, the most important single thing we can do, so that if I'm a farmer, I feel a responsibility as a member of my community to manage my farm in a way that will not negatively affect the waters of the state. As a homeowner, that I think about what it is I do in my house, and in my lawn, in my driveway, so I don't negatively affect the waters of the state. That as a commercial developer, that when I put in a big parking lot to service my stores, that I think about how to mitigate the impacts of the waters coming off that parking lot. When we all begin to adopt that level of concern and interest, then we hold ourselves accountable, not through a regulatory process, but through a societal process. And I think that will be, in the end, the most important thing we can do, because then everyone feels a responsibility, if not a moral imperative, to try to do as well as they can do, and understand that it may cost me a few $1,000s on my farm to do the right thing, so I separate my clean water from my dirty water and treat the dirty water the right way. Sometimes those practices and those changes are not very expensive, but they're very impactful. And we shouldn't have to wait for a farm inspector to come by to make those changes. Same with the household, same with the commercial developer, same with our road crews that are managing our roads.
Maybe put those on. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Let's go to Walden. Michael, good morning.
Yeah, AAPs, AMPs, BMPs, and then the person that's going to come after Secretary Ross will probably have CMPs and DMPs. You know, this is what we've been dealing with for 20 or 30 years. It's all platitudes all the time from the heads of the Agency of Agriculture, because they're captive to the number one cause of the problem, which is industrial farming. And it's not just the lake that industrial farming has killed by high concentration, by toxic inputs, by sheer scale. It's Vermont's small communities. It's Vermont's culture. They all have been obliterated by industrial agriculture. It has been paradise lost indeed. And instead, what we always hear, we just hear these platitudes, and now we're hearing all in. You know, if he was a law enforcement official, it'd be akin to, a deputy arriving at a murder scene with the guy standing there with the gun and praising him for sitting down and talking to us and having a discussion about what went wrong. And let's blame everybody. Let's blame the officers that arrived, the neighbors, when we know exactly who's holding the gun. And in this case, we know, again, it's industrial agriculture. And until, you know, you can throw out all your AAPs and AMPs and BMPs, until we focus on what industrial agriculture has done to this state, from small towns to waterways to health, we're just spewing platitudes. And Mark, come on, how many times are you going to have these ag secretaries sit down and spew this stuff to you without challenging them? Enough. Let's get to the solutions. Let's shut down. Let's ban industrial farming, and we will have solved the problem. It's not all in. We know who's doing it. Focus on it.
Thank you for your call.
Well, I understand the frustration. I've heard it before. And I think what we're trying to say in Vermont, and we're actually seeing happen, is we're seeing an evolution of lots of different kinds of agriculture. Some of the large farms in this state are some of the best managed farms with respect to their water quality impacts. Some of the small farms, if you go find them, can be some of the most egregious violators. That's why I think we're really, why I talk about trying to develop a culture. the forces, the economic forces outside the state, if you will, that are engaged in the world of agriculture, some of those are beyond our control. I think what we're trying to do, and I think we have largely done in this state, is really developed a family-based form of agriculture. Even our large farms are family-based. They do plug into a bigger food system. There's no question that there's elements in the food system that need fixing, and we all need to be pushing in that direction. I happen to think that the kinds of food products that the state of Vermont is generating from many of our farms that are finding great favor in the marketplaces of Boston and York, as well as our farmer markets in the state here, are part of that changing view of what, how important food is to our society and to our communities. We have evolved here over tens of years, if not over 100 years, and it's going to take a real strong effort, an ongoing effort, to change the system.
You really think, though, that conventional agriculture can continue the way it is and not have the lake continue to be polluted?
I think we need to change our practices, and I think that's part of what we're trying to do in this legislation.
And if that all happens, you really think it's going to stop the pollution of the lake?
The pollution of, you know, the lake is going to be ongoing at some level, depending, you know, the pollution is how you define it. It's an overload of an ecological system, and to the point where the system can't assimilate it anymore, and it has negative consequences on the environment, on people.
So is Michael right that conventional farming is incompatible with having a clean lake?
He may have that opinion, and
well, I'm asking your opinion.
My opinion is no. I don't think it's incompatible. I think we have to make changes, and I think the changes that are proposed in this legislation that we're talking about with the TMDL would be a very significant change in how we do agriculture in the state. And the good news is, from my opinion, the farming community recognizes they need to do they need to make changes. They recognize there's a problem. When I was on Missisquoi Bay this summer, and I tried to assemble a group of farmers to go out on the bay with me, and I had no shortage of people willing to go out with me. We tried to get it organized in about 4 or 5 days. It took us 8 days, and by the time by the time we were able to go there, the bloom had cleared. That's the kind of engagement and, you know, frankly, accountability that I have experienced with the farming community. There's some people that think that small farms, you know, the little tiny micro farms, are, you know, without fault. You know, everybody, you know, the biggest variable that on any farm, whether it's a real small micro farm or a large farm, is the management and their attitude and what resources and skills they bring to their job.
One of the ways that, I mean, I'm thinking of speeding. One of the ways that the police enhance in the ability for all of us to go at the right speed is to pull a couple of people over every now and then. And when you see a cop pulling somebody over, you know, it has an impact on you. You know, is that something in the future? You know, I know you don't really want to focus on the past here and what should have been done, but going forward here, is that a strategy, what I just said, does that make sense?
And actually, we have done that. This last, in this end of the summer, early fall, we have enforced against three farmers in particular for over $100,000 in fines. And that's not the cost of doing business. Those are meaningful fines. And they were ongoing, egregious violators that needed to clean it up. They needed to respond, because when they do that, they make everybody else who's trying to do the work look bad. They operate with a competitive advantage that the others don't, who are trying to comply with the rules. That's not fair. It's only fair that those that are violating the rules be held accountable, because the others are spending time, money, resources, and energy trying to do the right thing. And so we have already taken those kinds of actions, and we anticipate, where necessary, we will continue to take those kinds of actions. I'm confident that the farming community is hearing that, and the vast majority of the ones I deal with recognize their need to do that. And quite frankly, I've had many farmers say, we're glad to see you do what you did.
You know, I was looking at this bill, and some of the timelines look like they were going to be years out to develop regulations for X, Y, and Z. And I'm not going to get into what they are because they're really complicated stuff. But, you know, there's underwater drainage, for example. It's 2017. Is it really soon enough? Does the bill have deadlines and requirements that are soon enough?
Well, things take time. And the deadline you reference pertains to tile drainage. Let me talk first before I'll talk about tile drainage. Let me talk about the accepted agriculture practices. Rulemaking is a process that takes months. It's not something you do in a day because you want public input. You need to put a proposal out there. We're being asked to amend the rules on AAPs, the accepted agriculture practices, by July 1 of 16. That is a reasonable timeline. It will press us, given the resources we have in the agency and the way of personnel, to get that done, to provide an adequate public process. The tile drainage is a currently hot topic in agriculture all over the country because people are beginning to have concerns about the impact that tile drainage may have on elevating the pollution issues and whether or not tile drainage on all farms or on just some types of soil may bring more dissolved phosphorus into the water. And if that is the case, which we don't know because we haven't done all the studies yet, how could you mitigate that? It's an ongoing conversation, and the deadline that you mentioned was the study deadline for the agency to present a report to the legislature. Given the status of the studies on tile drainage, I think that's a reasonable deadline. It too may be aggressive, and the science is not yet settled on tile drainage, but we are concerned that there are some potential real problems with tile drainage and its impact, and then the question is, can it be mitigated, and if so, how?
Let's go to Hardwick. Karen, good morning.
I'd just like to mention that the competitive advantage of these big farms is the availability and their willingness to exploit cheap, illegal labor, which the rest of us can't do or are not willing to do. And my question is, why does no one talk about the millions of gallons of high phosphorus waste that Cabot's dumping every day? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you, Karen.
I think there are two questions there. One was the migrant labor issue, and the other is allegations around Cabot. I'll deal with the last one first. I know the Agency of Natural Resources, not the Agency of Agriculture, the Agency of Natural Resources has looked at that issue and have found that Cabot has been responsibly managing their wastewater. And I understand there may have been a problem once or twice, but on a regular basis, they have been complying with the rules and regulations of the Agency of Natural Resources that watch how they manage those kinds of practices. With respect to migrant workers, this is a very big issue. It's a national issue. It's an issue that farms that are large and some farms that are smaller than one would guess are using hired help. And they are using people that have come to the States, and they're required to provide those people. Those workers are supposed to provide certain paperwork, and the farmers are supposed to get that paperwork before they allow people to work on their farm. What's clear is there is a population of folks in the state that are called collectively migrant workers who are on our farms providing real services and being paid to do so. And they are doing work that is necessary on the farms, given the scale of the farms, and that some of them are illegal, not necessarily because they want to be, but because the process by which we are managing migrant workers in the United States has not been updated for quite some time. And this has been a debate that's been happening and sometimes raging in Congress about how to provide the appropriate immigration policy that enables us to have our workers. Now, one of the ironies around this issue is that we all benefit from these workers doing their work, and they support our communities. And I happen to believe that if we are going to accept their work and the benefits of their work, then we need to provide them with a reasonable way to be a legal worker in this country. And we have not done that yet. Senator Leahy, by way of example, has been working to try to fix those regulations at the federal level, and they have not yet been fixed.
Let's go to Barton. Jesse, good morning.
Go ahead.
Yep.
I just wanted to weigh in on this, on the runoffs and the pollution issue on Champlain. And I agree with the Secretary that it's not just the large farms. I think it's, I mean, I have pictures on my phone of, I drive all over the state for my work, and I have, in the spring, I took pictures of spring little mountain brooks that were weren't running water, they were running manure. I mean, I have the pictures, I've sent them to my senator, and I have pictures of horse farm, you know, just a family pet of a couple horses in the springtime. That manure, if those horses have been standing around all winter, that manure is going into these waterways. I agree with what you said, that it's all in. I mean, I think you're up against a pretty big challenge here. But it's in terms of the large farms, I think the hardest thing that's going to be to, you guys are talking about cover crops, and that sounds so great. It's kind of like saying we're all going to eat kale. These farms cut their corn after the frost, so that corn is dry enough. That's how they dry this corn up, to get the right moisture. You need to plant cover crops before the frost. That is not going to happen. It's not realistic. It's not a goal that's going to be achieved. And the other thing is the buffer zones. The best farmland is right up against the rivers and along all the ditches. So how are you going to get farmers to do that?
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll get the secretary to answer that question in just a moment. Thank you for your
call.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. Call them today for any and all of your printing needs. You can call them at 229-9335 on the web, jetservice-envelope.com.
We are high performance, low pressure. You've all been waiting for the President's Day event at Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Wait no longer for your new European-styled, German-engineered Volkswagen. Lease an award-winning Volkswagen Passat for only $149 per month, or a Volkswagen Jetta for $125 a month with $1,999 down. Walker Volkswagen's great selection and deeply discounted upfront prices make your next car so affordable. Passat and Jetta models offer clean-burning TDI technology, delivering an impressive 45 miles per gallon. Even the popular Sportwagen is on sale, over 30 in stock, discounted $4,000 off from MSRP. Passat's leasing for $149 or Jetta's for $125 a month or $4,000 discounts on sport wagons. This was worth waiting for. The President's Day event at Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Stop by, call, or click walkervt.com. Hurry in because all the excitement ends March 2nd. 36-month, 30,000-mile lease to qualified buyers. Tax title, registration, acquisition fee, extra. First month's payment due at signing. See dealer for details.
It's official. All Smiles Family Dental Center is Central Vermont's Invisalign preferred provider. To celebrate, we're offering Invisalign for the same price as traditional braces. Affordable financing programs are available. There is no reason not to get the fantastic smile you deserve with comfortable, clear, virtually invisible Invisalign aligners. Now for the same price as braces. Call 476-8700. That's 476-8700 to arrange a free initial consultation. Or visit myvtsmiles.com. All Smiles on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Are you all smiles?
All Smiles, All Smiles. Family Dental. All Smiles, All Smiles. Family Dental.
back continuing our discussion this morning with the Agriculture Secretary, Chuck Ross. So the caller just raised questions about two of the key things that were supposed to be helpful in reducing pollution, the cover crops and buffers.
Yes, good questions. The cover crop we're actually seeing is actually, if you drive out in the countryside, you can actually see thousands of acres that do have cover crops. And there are awesome techniques to enhance the establishment of those cover crops. Some is interseeding with the corn before it is actually harvested. You put the seed down. Some people are putting on with helicopters because then they can do that way, and they can also do it without rutting up their fields. And the other is managing the maturation date of the corn. There's different maturation dates for the corn that if you put an early corn on, you can get it off earlier and get the cover crop on more easily. And that may actually be a cost-effective thing to do when you think about the nutrient gain you have from having a well-established cover crop. You may lose some value because you don't have quite as big a yield, but you may gain fertilizer value with the cover crop that then you till in later in the spring. So the evidence is that farmers are interested. We've had massive sign-ups when we provided some incentives. The evidence is out there. There are different ways to approach it. On the buffer strips, that's just one of the things we need to do. And there are places where the soil is actually very, very good, and where we'll be asking for buffer strips. One of the things we are looking at is how to have smart buffers, which would be adjust the width of the buffer given the specifics of the field, because every field is different, like every farm is different. And if you're up against a stream or a ditch in the field is sloping away from that, if the ditch is on the uphill side, you may not need as big a buffer as you would down at the bottom of the field, the bottom of the slope, where you may need more than a standard buffer. And that would be smart buffering. We haven't gotten there yet, but we're looking at that. But the buffer strips do take production, take land out of production for row cropping. No question about it. That has an impact, and farmers are going to need to adjust to that.
Let's go to Addison. Melanie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Are you there?
Mm-hmm. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. I can. Chuck, I'm a native Vermonter, and I have a dairy farm here in Addison. I milk about 50 cows, and I'm a grazier and grass-fed, and so I hope that I'm complying, because I also own a camp on Lake Champlain, and this last year I just really saw the lake deteriorate down here at this end of the lake like I'd never seen before. I didn't even want to swim in it this past summer. But, the thing that really, I guess, aggravates me is the fact that, we are getting the blame. I understand that. And, yes, I'm sure we're all part of the problem. But the week of Christmas here in Virgins, with all the rain and the snow and everything, they dumped 500,000 gallons of untreated sewage into Otter Creek, which runs into Lake Champlain. So we all need to take responsibility, but these municipalities, I think, are really contributing when they can't handle their own surrey or slurry or whatever.
All right, let me frame a question at this. Thank you for your call. So has the agriculture community been blamed too much in the past, and is everybody else doing enough in this all-in?
I'm not sure I can answer. Have they been blamed too much? I think they have been focused on at times at the expense of not fully appreciating the impact of all the other land uses. The lake is considered to be impacted, if you consider 100% of the impact, 40% of that impact is from agriculture. 60% is from everything else. So that's right, that says it right there. Agriculture has a significant impact, a significant role, and needs to be a significant part of the solution. But it is not even the majority of the problem. The majority of the problem comes from a number of different land uses and activities, from how we manage and clean our roads and do our road ditches, how we manage and install our buildings in the water that comes off those roofs, the water that comes off those parking lots, how we do our residential developments, do we have stormwater utilities in those developments, and how we manage our wastewater treatment plants. The truth of the matter is that you know, when man first came to this area, they started to have an impact on that lake, and we have dramatically changed the landscape here. We are going to continue to have impact on the lake. What the scientists are telling us, we have to reduce our phosphorus emissions by 35 or 6% in order to get to a place where the lake can assimilate on an ongoing basis the impacts we have. That's a significant number to get to, and it's going to take everybody contributing. It's not just the farmers. It's going to take better management of wastewater treatment plants, better stormwater utility or implementation of stormwater utilities in the residential and commercial developments, better management on how we deal with our roads. It's going to take all those things. That's how you get to this all-in strategy. If we're not doing the right thing in any of those areas, we're compromising our ability to reach the kinds of goals the scientists tell us we need to reach in terms of phosphorus reduction.
Do you think this bill goes far enough?
I think it does. You know, and there's always a risk that what we think is correct today is may not be correct in the future. And, you know, candidly, Mark, that is what has happened to us, because we thought we were doing the right things in the past and we figured out we didn't. Some of that is because of our own ignorance, and we didn't understand the process, the ecology, the impacts. What we're doing now is we're trying to implement scientifically based solutions. And we're trying to target them with the information we have today that we didn't have in the past, which is the evolution of our intelligence about how to manage this. We now have a better idea where the impacts are greatest, where the risks are greatest, and this bill enables us to focus on those, where we're going to get the biggest bang for the resources we expend to address the problem. That's information, quite frankly, that my predecessors, both in this position in state government, in the legislature, in the scientific community, didn't have. So we need to continue to get smarter, and I hope that if this bill has shortcomings in some place that we can't anticipate, that we'll learn about it soon and we'll be able to make adjustments. That's part of what we need to do.
One of the ways the cleanup's going to be funded is with this tax on fertilizer, which is 25 cents a ton now, $15 a ton. How's that going over in the agriculture community?
Well, it was initially proposed at 30, and the reason it was proposed is because it's the mechanics work. We know how much fertilizer is, and the fertilizer is related to the problem, and that fee of $30 was proposed actually raises the money necessary to implement the programs we need. I presume I wasn't a part of all the committee discussions. Representative Dean, who chaired the committee to put this bill out, I presume had testimony around that. I suspect people who were concerned about the $30 feels 15 is better.
There's a feeling it's disproportionately unfair to large farms.
That's one of the concerns. Another concern has this been raised is that those who don't use fertilizer, commercial fertilizer, but may import organic or other kinds of fertilizer like chicken manure will be exempted from it. There's a number of concerns.
Are you going to support this or oppose this $15 fee as an agriculture secretary?
The governor's proposed the $30, and we are supporting the $30. We understand people have concerns about it, but if they have concerns, they need to come up with a different funding source that actually works, that raises the money, that can be raised, will raise the money, and get the job done. This is an ongoing conversation. You know, this is why the democratic process is a good process, because we get to have the exchange of ideas, and somebody may have a better idea, but it needs to be a better idea in all ways. It needs to be workable, it needs to raise the money, and it needs to be sustainable. So we're not caught in a place where we get some money today and don't have it tomorrow.
Thank you for coming in. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Agriculture Secretary Chuck Ross. A reminder that coming up on the program on Wednesday, we'll talk with Al Gobay. He's the chair of the Green Mountain Care Board. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with local author Ben Hewitt. Thanks for joining us on the program. Have a great rest of the day. Please come back and join us same time, same place tomorrow, right here on these great radio stations. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, 101.9 in the Northeast Kingdom, and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier News is next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita. Rita Foley. The Islamic State group is stopped in Iraq and on the defensive there now, according to the U.S. Army General commanding.